I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, part-time intellectual wastrel.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that features three movie fans who accept each other pretty much for who we are, even given the vast differences in our respective ages and life experiences. The trio of movies that we'll be discussing this week represent three different character studies. The first is James Mangold's look at the one and only Bob Dylan, portrayed by Timothée Chalamet in A Complete Unknown. Following that, we'll take on Helena Rain's Baby Girl, which stars Nicole Kidman. And finally, Robert Eggers' adaptation of the Bram Stoker / F.W. Murnau-inspired tale titled Nosferatu. Let's begin, then, by welcoming a boy from Hibbing, Minnesota to 1961 New York City. That's when the boy, who reinvents himself as Bob Dylan, arrives in the Big Apple and, through the eyes of director James Mangold, screenplay by him and the former critic Jay Cox, we watch as Dylan, played by Chalamet, meets with his hero, Woody Guthrie, played by Scoot McNairy, gets adopted by Pete Seeger, played by Edward Norton, begins an on-again, off-again relationship with Sylvie Russo, a substitute for the real-life Susie Rotolo, played by Ellen Fanning, gains fame enough to woo Joan Baez, played by Monica Barbaro, and then, as his fame grows, begins to rebel against the expectations and limitations put on him both by record executives and adoring fans. And it all leads to his infamous performance at the 1965 Newport Folk Festival, when, egged on by none other than Johnny Cash, played by Boyd Holbrook, he shocks everyone by rejecting his acoustic guitar and going electric. That's a lot of history to cover in just 2 hours and 21 minutes, and not everyone who is a Dylan fan is bound to be pleased by what the movie glosses over. But Mangold keeps his camera moving, Chalamet is a revelation as a not-always-likable Dylan, and the music, rendered rather well by Chalamet himself, is, as always, magnetic. The result is a film that is far better than many of us expected, and one that ranks as a first-rate biopic of one of the most influential singer-songwriters of the 20th century.
Yeah, and I'll put it on the table now that I am a massive Bob Dylan fan, and this particular period in his career, I mean, the albums that he was making right after he went electric, like Bringing It All Back Home and Highway 61 Revisited and Blonde on Blonde, those are some of my all-time favorite albums and were such revelations to me when I discovered them. You know, they just kind of open up a new door in your brain about this is how music can do this. Music can be this way. And so he's very, very important to me. And of course, I was looking forward to A Complete Unknown. And Dylan is such a titan. And because of that, and because of the fact that he's an enigma to even people that have known him for years, I don't think there's ever going to be a film that really can perfectly capture his essence or his influence. And there have even been big epic documentaries by Martin Scorsese that have tried to do that. I think my problem with this film, which I thought was all right, I just think it's totally square, to borrow parlance from the time. It's very well made, as you said, and I like Chalamet, especially in the musical moments of the movie. But for most of its runtime, I thought A Complete Unknown was really conventional in a lot of ways. And Mangold, of course, about 20 years ago, made Walk the Line, which was his Johnny Cash biopic. And that partially inspired the spoof movie Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. And that movie skewered the musical biopic so completely and so expertly that I'm surprised James Mangold wanted to come back to the musical biopic, let alone another one with Johnny Cash as a central character. And I actually thought Boyd Holbrook,
he was great.
He did a good job as Johnny Cash, and that's hard to do. I think I still prefer the documentaries I mentioned by Scorsese, No Direction Home and Rolling Thunder Review. And I also would really encourage people to, if you haven't seen it, or to revisit I'm Not There, the Todd Haynes film, which was kind of that mixed media portrait of Dylan. And I just thought that blew apart the conventions of the musical biopic in a way that fit who Dylan is as a shapeshifter and as, you know, an enigma. And also, the look at the Greenwich Village folk scene in Inside Llewyn Davis, I think, would be a good companion piece to A Complete Unknown. But yeah, I mean, I was absorbed in this movie as much as I could be. Maybe I'm too much of a fan to, you know, maybe I was pushing back a little too much. But yeah, I thought all the actors did a good job. And I thought Monica Barbaro, who is in Top Gun Maverick, I mean, again, it's not easy to sing Joan Baez songs and sound like Joan Baez. She did a really good job.
It's impossible to sound like Joan Baez.
Yeah, and I thought the dynamic between her and Bob Dylan was interesting.
Yeah, but, because she classifies him, as we know, with one word.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I'm mixed on this towards positive, but, yeah, I think there are other film versions of Bob Dylan that I prefer to this one.
And I think that's fair enough, because this particular portrayal, as you mentioned, doesn't do anything out of the ordinary. So A Complete Unknown is, you know, mostly true to his life story. There are, of course, some liberties that are taken. I mean, I was sort of intrigued by the fact it starts off at Greystone Park Psychiatric Hospital, where I actually represented clients once upon a time. And I think that that part, or at least even if he saw Woody Guthrie, it wasn't in the presence of Pete Seeger and you know, so forth. So that was
even in the hospital.
Well, him traveling to see Woody Guthrie has become almost like a piece of his mythology. It's like a lot of people kind of point to that as like the birth of Bob Dylan. Whether or not it actually happened the way that it's been retold, it does have this kind of mythic quality to it. The rest of the movie doesn't have a mythic quality, though it does feel like a very straightforward narrative.
No, I'm glad you used the word myth, because everything about Dylan is mythical.
Yep,
from the changing
totally.
Of his name.
Yep.
Little Bobby Zimmerman from Hibbing, Minnesota, goes to New York, and then he becomes Bob Dylan. And then Bob Dylan becomes Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like this movie a lot more than you did, Nathan. And as a matter of fact, in our next show, I'll tell you just exactly how much I did like it. But I liked it because, for one thing, I approached it with a lot of trepidation, because I thought, first of all, come on, Timothy Chalamet is going to play Bob Dylan.
The world's most beautiful boy.
I was pleasantly surprised by how well he captured a sense of what we might think Dylan was. I mean, there's a way in which he hardly ever smiles through the entire film. He looks down with his hooded eyes looking up at everybody like he distrusts everybody and everything. And as the movie goes on, when we see the change from, you know, he becomes a folk hero, and then it's like everybody's trying to make me into something I don't want to be. It just felt perfect. And I loved what Mangold did. I mean, this is a guy who made 310 from Yuma, and he made, I forget, a couple other movies. He's
Logan,
made several movies.
Logan, for one, the X-Men movie. Yeah,
right. But he's made some movies that are just kind of ordinary films. And I thought he was quite good in this film. I thought the way the camera moved, and, you know, I'm as big a Dylan fan as you are. I started off with the freewheeling Bob Dylan, and then had to weather the notion of he's going electric. And I saw him with the band in 1966, in which the first half of the concert, he was acoustic. Second half of the concert, it was electric. And it was electric,
I bet,
to use the word.
I bet.
I mean, I'm just going to say that I really am a fan of A Complete Unknown. I liked everything about it.
Well, and I think the thing that's notable to me, because I'm not a particularly big Dylan fan. I did see him when he came here most recently. That was a very intriguing concert, just saying.
Yep.
And I have seen him occasionally throughout the years. But I think the fact that people I do know who are Dylan aficionados, you know, seem to appreciate this film. I also think that he was fine with ultimately how he's portrayed, because, you know, in these narrative films, they can go sideways so easily.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that did not happen here. So even if you're not in love with it, I think there's a lot to appreciate about it.
For people who have been living under a Rolling Stone for all these years, Nathan, what's the variation of the title? What's the origin of the title?
A Complete Unknown?
Yes.
Well, I mean, it's from the lyrics to Like a Rolling Stone,
exactly.
Of course.
Thank
and
you.
It has a double meaning here, because it's about him showing up, being a nobody, and then, of course, the fact that nobody has been able to get their arms around Bob Dylan as a person. My favorite character in the movie that we haven't talked about was Edward Norton's Pete Seeger.
Oh, yeah.
He's quite good.
He's torn between his parental admiration for Dylan, but he also feels betrayed by Dylan leaving folk behind. My least favorite character in the movie was this fictionalized version of Susie Rotolo, played by Elle Fanning. I thought that all of her scenes were just a variation on the one that came before. Her dialogue is, I think, real bad in this. It's underlining themes that we already got. But yeah,
I think it did represent real life in their relationship, which was a struggle.
But
and,
she just kind of, her character is just there to say the same thing over and over and over again.
Yeah, like, Bob, how are we going to deal with the fame? Or like, did
or,
am I your muse, or what am I?
You know, I don't really know who you are. Maybe someday I'll learn who the real you is. And I'm like, okay, I get it. So yeah, I didn't much care for that character. But yeah, I thought Edward Norton actually, in a really difficult role, did a good job as Pizza.
No, he was quite good.
Yeah.
And that was our discussion of James Mangold's A Complete Unknown. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcast of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to discuss Baby Girl and Nosferatu. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed James Mangold's biopic of Bob Dylan called A Complete Unknown. Let's now turn to two other late-year releases, Helena Rain's Baby Girl, and then Robert Eggers' version of the vampire tale Nosferatu. We'll begin with the former, written and directed by the actress-turned-filmmaker Rain. Rain is a veteran of stage and screen, mostly in her native Netherlands. Baby Girl is her third stint behind the camera of a feature film, her 2022 effort being the Who's Gonna Die Next horror study Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. Baby Girl, by contrast, is closer to her first feature, 2019's Instinct, in which a seasoned woman psychologist engages in a psychological struggle with an imprisoned sex offender. Instead of a psychologist, our Baby Girl protagonist is the CEO of a tech company specializing in robotics. So again, a woman in a position of power. But we learn in the very first scene that she has a sexual hang-up. She can't orgasm with her husband, played by Antonio Banderas, though she keeps her frustration a secret. That is, she does until she encounters Samuel, played by Harris Dickinson, a young, hunky intern who provides her the edgy kind of relationship that she craves. Instead of Baby Girl being what another filmmaker might make it into, which is someone in a position of power threatened by what constitutes unethical behavior with it leading to disaster, Rain is more interested in making her film into a woman's coming to grips with her own psychosexual needs, and in doing so, claiming, or maybe reclaiming, her personal power. The acting all around is good, though Kidman spends much of the time seemingly doe-eyed. Not everyone is going to accept what Rain is trying to do, yet some of us were at least interested in how she was doing it.
I had a rather epiphanous experience today, so I was prepared to discuss this film on one level. But then after talking about Baby Girl with a millennial Gen X group of people whose opinions I really respect, I had to sort of rethink my whole approach to what was going on. Because I think I was approaching Baby Girl and taking it, you know, very literally for what I was seeing on the screen. And it just seemed improbable and unrealistic, and I didn't get it, and I didn't know if that's a throwback to being a baby boomer second wave feminist. And then I was trying to, you know, sort of operate in that space for a while, and I was being self-accusatory and blah, blah, blah. But then I talked to these youngins, and they felt as though you had to approach this as more of an allegory. And I think, Dan, in your introduction, you sort of tapped into that, because I just found it to be very unrealistic that she had been with this man for 2 decades and she had never had an orgasm. And, you know, there was no discussion about that. That just seemed improbable and unlikely. But that's not ultimately what this film is about. I mean, it is about gender bending. It's about looking at relationships, contrasting the workplace, the professional with the personal. Also, a lot of commentary has focused on the age differential between the Nicole Kidman character and Harris Dickinson. And I don't even really think that's what it's about. I mean, it's about this person who comes into her life unexpectedly and inexplicably and maybe improbably, who taps into something that represents her authentic self. And so there are, you know, different sexual scenes. They aren't like overly graphic, though, to my way of thinking. But there's one scene where they go to a rave and she just kind of cuts loose and she's dancing. And she had said previously she didn't dance and so forth. That, I don't know, for some reason, that scene sort of captured for me what this film was actually about. So if you go in looking at it literally, HR would have been all over this. you know, I think that, like I said, her relationship with her husband just seemed really completely unrealistic. But if you can sort of look at it from a broader perspective, I think this film will work for you.
And I think this movie is genuinely provocative, that Baby Girl gives you so many things to think about and talk about and maybe even argue about after it's over, because it is about all these things. It's about gender dynamics. It's about power dynamics. It's about role playing, not only sexual role playing, but about role playing within the corporate world. And I think it pushes the envelope in all of those ways. But I think there's an extra layer here because it's not just about those things. It's also about the people that Rain has written. And they're very complex and they're very difficult. And they sometimes
not
say
likeable
and do horrible things to each other. And I also thought it was interesting that this isn't just a blatant, if you want to call it some kind of empowerment fantasy or whatever, because on top of everything else, the company that Nicole Kidman's character runs, it feels like a company that's probably doing bad in the world. Like, yeah.
It's about robots, and that in and of itself is sort of a metaphor,
yes,
for what's happening.
And the company itself is so compartmentalized and digital, and she's kind of in that same category as a person. So there's a lot going on here. And you're totally right, Dan, that it's structured like a typical yuppie erotic thriller, yep, that we got a lot of in the 90s. And so you think
Secretary.
It's
Secretary.
Or even something like, I don't know, Basic Instinct or Fatal Attraction.
9.5 weeks.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What was the Michael Crichton movie with
Disclosure?
Disclosure, yes.
Yes, 100%. You think it's going in that direction, and it doesn't go in that direction.
It doesn't
at
all.
I really liked Baby Girl, and I thought Nicole Kidman was terrific in it. And I thought, you know, we say all the time, like, oh, that actor was brave for doing a sex scene or nudity or whatever. I think it's brave for her to be doing a movie in which her character's physical appearance,
yep,
and her aging is a topic of conversation,
yep,
with the,
yep,
characters.
Yep.
Like, that takes,
I mean,
some guts. So,
you see her getting Botox,
yeah,
shots.
You sure do.
I mean, you know,
you sure do.
And
right,
there are a lot of close-ups, uh-huh, of her face.
And we can contrast that with the AMC commercial that she's been doing for the last 25 years.
In soft focus.
Although, you know, when I saw Baby Girl at the AMC, they didn't play the Nicole Kidman ad before it.
Oh, they did ours.
Oh,
yeah,
well,
yeah.
I thought that was strange.
Mm. At any rate, that was our discussion of Baby Girl. Let's now turn to Robert Eggers's Nosferatu. Bram Stoker's famous novel Dracula was published in 1897, and it was used as the inspiration for German filmmaker F.W. Murnau's 1922 silent film Nosferatu, and has gone on to be interpreted any number of ways in print, stage, and film. For some reason, Eggers decided to make his version of Murnau's film, though with sound and in color. And the basic story is much the same. Nicholas Holt plays Thomas, a young man in 1838 Germany, trying to get ahead. Hired to travel to a remote part of the Carpathian Mountains and enact a real estate deal, he's forced to leave his wife Ellen, played by Lily Rose Depp, who we come to find out has some sort of spiritual tie with the man, the creature actually known as Count Orlok, played by an unrecognizable Bill Skarsgård, whom Thomas is traveling to meet. Things go wrong for everyone. Orlok comes to Germany, causing a plague to infect Thomas's town, and only the ministrations of an alchemy-spouting professor, played by Willem Dafoe, and Ellen herself can set things right. In both his 2015 film, The Witch, and 2019 film, The Lighthouse, Eggers explored the psychology of the occult in an unnerving stylistic manner. Here, though, he makes a perfectly respectful, by-the-numbers adaptation of what Murnau pioneered, though with a few scenes of graphic sex. And what he gives us feels, well, to me, boring. In fact, not only was I not the slightest bit frightened at any point, I even had to stifle a laugh, to be honest, several different times.
Well, I love Robert Eggers beyond The Witch and my personal favorite, The Lighthouse.
Yes.
He also did The Northman, which,
yes,
is a crazy movie featuring Nicole Kidman in a wonderfully campy performance. And he's just such a meticulous filmmaker. It's like the thatches in the roofs of the houses are period accurate. When Nicholas
Holt went to the
goes,
Kubrick school of
absolutely.
Filmmaking. Yeah.
When Nicholas Holt goes walking down those cobblestone streets in Germany, it looks like they took a time machine,
yeah,
and filmed it there. I mean, it's really incredible. It's such a tactile world that he creates. This is the first of his movies that just has not worked for me. And I would also agree with you that it is boring. I mean, I found
it's
this thing
definitely not scary.
No, I found this thing mostly stultifying, and
yeah,
I don't know why, because it's 2 hours of people screaming and convulsing and vomiting and bleeding from the eyes, and everyone's like hysterical through it. And yet, for me, it just felt stuck in,
yeah,
neutral, despite the fact that there were moments, there were visual moments where I thought, wow, look at that. You can see the money up there on screen. And of course, he's doing a lot of visual references to the Murnau film, to Herzog's interpretation of the movie. There are even some nods to the Coppola version of Dracula. So there's lots of fun little things like that. But I agree with you. I just don't think this Nosferatu works. And I also, this is, I think, the ultimate stake in the heart of this movie. I didn't particularly care for Bill Skarsgård's interpretation of Count Orlok. I mean, I know that he looks more like supposedly Stoker's description of that character, but I didn't think he had any real weight or presence.
Well, you can well imagine what I thought of this.
Yeah, I'm
because
sure
I had to be
this.
Dragged here. Yeah. But I took one for the team and went. But these vampire movies generally don't work for me anyway, and this one really didn't work. I mean, you are correct. There are some visually stunning scenes in this movie.
All the way
and,
through it,
yeah,
too.
And actually, this was so funny because when I went into the film, I was like, gosh, the protagonist in Nosferatu looks sort of like a less handsome Nicholas Holt, you know? And so then I was like, oh, that is Nicholas Holt.
And we've seen him, by the way, in three movies in like the last
absolutely.
3 months.
Right,
so he's
I give
everywhere.
Him credit for that. But I loved when Willem Dafoe came on the scene, you know, and that's when you realized at that point, you're like, oh, The Lighthouse really was a very intriguing, entertaining movie. And I just don't know what this version of Nosferatu brought to anything.
They should have hired Robert Pattinson instead of Bill Skarsgård. That would have been perfect.
That would have been interesting. And obviously, Willem Dafoe previously played Max Schreck, who played Count Orlok in the original Nosferatu in the film Shadow of the Vampire.
You know,
so there's some fun little,
The one strangely disturbing thing I found about Robert Eggers' Nosferatu is the argument they make about anti-science. Science can only tell you so much. You know, you have to go what you believe and what you feel. And I'm going, wait a minute. And this today's world, that's not the argument
to
be making.
Well, hey, different arguments in 1830s Germany.
Yeah.
You know. They were using leeches and stuff back then.
Yeah, that's right. So. And they thought the world was flat. Nobody thinks that today, right?
No.
Aye, aye, aye.
At any rate, that was our discussion of Robert Eggers' Nosferatu, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discussed both James Mangold's A Complete Unknown and Helena Rain's Baby Girl. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the late, great Federico Fellini. If there were a little more silence, if we all kept quiet, maybe we could understand something. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.